Hello, this is Dave, returning with the News Gazette for Sunday, February 15, 2026. We'll continue now with the death notices on page A6. Megan Nicole Arnold, Danville. Megan Nicole Arnold, 36, a lifelong resident of Danville, passed away at 8:40 a.m. Wednesday, February 11, 2026, at her home. Cremation rites will be accorded. A visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday, February 18th at Northside Church of Christ, 17167 East 2750 North Road, Bismarck. The memorial service will follow the visitation and begin at 1 p.m. at the church with Mike Roebling officiating. Burial will be held in Johnson Cemetery in Danville. Memorials may be made in Megan's name to Make-A-Wish Foundation, Northside Church of Christ, 17167 East 2750 North Road, Bismarck, Illinois, 61814, or Donor's Choice. Please visit anderson-funeral-home.com to view Megan's Eternal Tribute page and to send condolences to the family. Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston is handling the arrangements. Gladys Brown, Champaign. Gladys M. Brown, 91, of Champaign, died on Tuesday, February 10, 2026, at Meadowbrook of Champaign. A homegoing celebration will begin at noon Friday at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 1215 West Bradley Avenue, Urbana, preceded by visitation at 11 a.m. Interment will follow at 1:30 p.m. at Woodlawn Lincoln Cemetery. Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 1215 West Bradley Avenue in Urbana, is handling arrangements. Michael Coffey, Urbana. Michael E. Coffey, born in 1945, died at his home in Urbana on January 13, 2026. Rita L. Harlan, Rock Island. Rita Lee Hicks Harlan was born on June 16, 1944. She died at 2:19 a.m. on January 31, 2026 at Bridal Brook Assisted Living in Mahomet. According to family wishes, Rita will be cremated and her ashes will be interred at 2 p.m. May 4, 2026 at Rock Island Memorial Park in Rock Island. The Reverend Peter Galbraith will officiate. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Alzheimer's Association or a charity of your choice. Condolences may be offered at www.owensfuneralhomes.com. Ingeborg Gertrude Knight, Champaign. It is with deep love and sorrow that we announce that Ingeborg Gertrude Knight passed away on June 13, 2026 at home in Walnut Creek, California. Ingeborg was born on September 1, 1931 in Stuttgart, Germany. A memorial service will be held on Thursday, March 15th in Walnut Creek, California. Her memorial website is hosted at Forever Mist. Dale Lieb, Rantoul. Dale Lieb, 90, of Rantoul, died on Tuesday, February 3rd, 2026, at home. Visitation for the Army veteran will be from 10 to 10:30 a.m. on Thursday at St. Malachy Catholic Church, 311 East Grove Avenue in Rantoul. A funeral mass will be at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday at the church. Burial will follow in Holy Sepulchral Cemetery, Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Centers, Lux Chapel, 1551 East Grove Avenue, Rantoul, is handling arrangements. Milton March, Danville. Milton Dean March, 73 of Danville, died on Wednesday, February 11th, 2026, at Accolade Healthcare of Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street in Danville. Mary Mathis, Champaign. Mary M. Mathis, 91, of Champaign, died on Monday, February 9th, 2026, at home. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday at Owens Funeral Home, 101 North Elm Street, Champaign, with a rosary service at 7:45 p.m. A funeral mass will be at 11 a.m. Thursday at Holy Cross Catholic Church, 405 West Clark Street in Champaign. Burial will follow at Woodlawn Cemetery in Urbana. Kenneth Pearson, Danville. Kenneth Russell Pearson, 79, of Danville, died on Tuesday, January 13, 2026, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Graveside services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday at Danville National Cemetery. Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street in Danville, is handling arrangements. David Schroeder, Danville. David Eugene Schroeder, 66, of Danville, died on Monday, February 9th, 2026, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Friday at Trinity Lutheran Church, 824 East Main Street in Danville, with Pastor Kent Tibben officiating. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Burial will be in Lutheran Cemetery in Danville, Rortvedt Funeral Services and Crematory at 3 South Hodge Street, Tilton, is handling arrangements. Jane Swinford, Jacksonville. Jane Swinford, 93, of Jacksonville, formerly of Rantoul and Champaign, died Thursday, February 12, 2026, at the Grove Nursing and Rehab in Jacksonville. A graveside service will be held 11 a.m. Monday, February 16th, at Woodlawn Cemetery in Urbana. The Buchanan and Cody Funeral Home in Jacksonville is in charge of the arrangements. Condolences may be left online at buchanancody.com. Dorothy Thomas, Sullivan. Dorothy Lee Thomas, 90, of Sullivan, formerly of Danville, died on Wednesday, February 11, 2026, at Eastview Healthcare. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East Williams in Danville. Bob Tichenor, Fishers, Indiana. This isn't your standard obituary, but our dad wasn't an ordinary guy. Bob Tichenor, fondly known as Hoosier Bob on 1400 AM radio in Champaign, passed away on February 11th, 2026. Visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. with a celebration of Bob's life at 1 p.m. on Friday, June 5th, 2026, at Randall and Roberts Fishers Mortuary, 12010 Allison Road, Fishers, Indiana. In honor of Linda, memorial contributions may be made to the Alzheimer's Association, 50 East 91st Street, Suite 100, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46240. Condolences may be made at randallroberts.com. Carly Ware, Champagne. Carly Lorraine Ware, 8, of Champagne, died on Tuesday, February 3, 2026, at Children's Hospital in St. Louis. Memorial services will be from 1 to 3 p.m., February 28, at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 1215 West Bradley Avenue in Urbana. Dale Williams, Tuscola. Dale Williams, born on March 11, 1955, in Champaign, passed away on February 11, 2026, in Tuscola. He lived a full life and will be dearly missed by many. A visitation will be held on Wednesday, February 18th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center's Champaign Chapel, 710 North Neal Street in Champaign. Please join Dale's family in sharing memories, photos, and videos on his tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. And continuing with Kathy's mailbag, what became of Blue Waters Hardware after it was decommissioned? Thursday's News Gazette mentioned the University of Illinois' now decommissioned Blue Waters supercomputer. What does that mean? Is the hardware just sitting there doing nothing? No. In fact, it's not even sitting there anymore, according to Bill Kramer, Blue Waters director and primary investigator with the U of I's National Center for Supercomputing Applications. The National Science Foundation awarded the Blue Waters supercomputer to the NCSA in 2007. Like any other state-of-the-art system, it was superseded over time. Blue Waters provided very high quality and reliable operations from 2011 through 2021, Kramer said. He said it was decommissioned because the NCSA did not have the funds to continue covering the operating costs. The vast majority were utility costs, primarily electricity and cooling. Once the system was turned off and disconnected, we went through a decommissioning process that assured all the parts of Blue Waters were reused, repurposed, or recycled so that no e-waste was produced or went to a landfill or other place, he said. We worked with a company called Computer Recovery Associates from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, who are experts in such decommissioning to ensure it was done the right way. Kramer provided some examples of what happened to parts of the Blue Waters hardware and essential coolants. The refrigerator coolant was removed and redeployed to other cooling systems, as there is a shortage of it. The coolant was the type used in freezers and refrigerators in supermarkets. The memory, which was very high performance on original delivery, was repurposed to other devices, including handheld devices. The CPU, or central processing unit, and GPUs, graphics processing units, were used as spare parts for other systems. The critical minerals, such as gold and copper, were extracted or recycled and reclaimed. The permanent storage devices had all their data destroyed before reuse. The decommissioning effort took about 3 months, and the results were in accordance with all university, state, and federal rules, Kramer said. The space and infrastructure Blue Waters used in the National Petascale Computing Facility on South Oak Street in Champaign is now being used for other advanced computing systems and projects. Blue Waters was intended to have a 5-year operational period that turned into 9 highly effective years through strategic cost reduction investments, innovative system and service methods, experienced project management, and substantial support from the National Science Foundation throughout the time frame, complemented by support from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency from 2019 through 2021, according to a 2021 U of I press release that announced its decommissioning. And continuing with mailbag, sidewalk snow removal after the last snowstorm was pretty abysmal in most places around town. Even if merchants cleared the walks, plowed snow sometimes blocked their ramps. Do any local parks prioritize clearing their walkways after a big snow? The reader said it was several days before she could safely walk outdoors, and of course, walking or running laps around a gym isn't nearly as invigorating as spending time in nature, winter, spring, summer, or fall. While CU's park districts do have priority lists for snow removal, clearing walking paths is not at the tippy top of either of them. From Rich McMahon, Crown's Maintenance Supervisor, Urbanic Park District. After a snowfall, our top priority is attending to our park district buildings, plowing the parking lots, and clearing the snow, so people can easily and safely get into the buildings. Some of our buildings have earlier opening times than others, such as Health and Wellness and the Indoor Aquatic Center, so they are at the top of the list. After buildings have been tended to, plows will move on to other parking lots. Crews that clear walking paths will move on to the parks that don't have buildings. Of these, we try to get the ones that are used as school routes cleared first. We can normally get to all of these things in one day, with a vast majority of the sites being completed by noon. However, things like equipment breakdowns or higher snow amounts can make the process take longer than what is typical. And from Sarah Sandquist, Executive Director of Champaign Park District, our first priority after snowfall is ensuring safe access to park district facilities. From there, and depending on whether Unit 4 schools are in session, staff focus next on sidewalks immediately surrounding nearby schools, including Centennial, Spalding, Eisner, and Douglas. At the same time, separate crews address sidewalks that fall under city snow removal ordinances to ensure compliance once a 24-hour clearing notice is issued. Once those areas are complete, staff move on to park pathways and trails, following an established priority list. When all equipment is deployed, these priority areas are typically cleared within 2 working days. When conditions warrant, we pre-treat facility parking lots and main entrance walks with salt. CPD does not use brine solutions. As with many winter operations, timing and weather conditions can affect how quickly all areas are addressed, particularly during large or prolonged snow events. That said, snow removal priorities are reviewed regularly to balance safety, access, staffing, and available resources. The next question is, are there plans to expand the gym facilities at the Douglas Center? It's always packed. This question came in by the radio mailbag at the end of January. Champaign Park District's Sandquist says the district is in the middle of a comprehensive facility feasibility study that includes the Douglas Community Center gym, along with all park district facilities. Once the study is complete, the park board will review the architect's recommendations and use them to inform an expanded long-range capital improvement plan. We anticipate wrapping the study up this spring, and then the park board will need some time to review, digest, and plan. We are anticipating incorporating ideas from the plan in our fiscal year 28 capital plan and beyond in our fiscal 28 through fiscal year 37 10-year capital improvement plan, pending board approval. Sandquist said a survey of randomly selected Champaign residents is being done concurrently with the facility feasibility study. We are seeking feedback from the community on their thoughts about future projects, programs, and priorities. Phase 2 of the survey should launch by about mid-March or April, and if you weren't randomly selected to complete a survey in Phase 1, we are interested in hearing your thoughts in this next phase. When that time comes, details will be available on the champaignparks.org website and via the district's Facebook and Instagram accounts. And continuing in sports from the Daily Pitch, sports editor Matt Daniels with a look at what's going on around the area. The three reasons we love sports today. Number one, not only is Illinois hosting the Indiana men's basketball team on Sunday afternoon for the first time since January 27, 2024, but the Illini are asking fans to stripe State Farm Center for the noon tip from Champaign. Number two, fans with tickets in odd-numbered sections should wear orange. Fans in even-numbered sections should wear blue, and Illinois students should wear orange. Number three, at least 9 members of the Illinois cheerleading team, and possibly more, will join the News Gazette Sports Page radio show from 5 to 6 p.m. on Monday at the Esquire in downtown Champaign. Area high school cheerleaders are encouraged to attend the show, which will air on WDWS 1400 AM and 93.9 FM. And the numbers game. 37 passes caught by Illinois tight ends last season out of 251 receptions by the Illini. Caden Fagan has 30 career catches at Illinois out of the running back position. But how many will the 6'3", 255-pound Atwood native catch in 2026 now that he's switching to tight end, especially with Tanner Arkin out of eligibility and Cole Rusk transferring to Arizona? Stay tuned. And crowd control. Three events I'm paying attention to are Champaign Central versus Centennial Girls Basketball. The third-seeded Maroons and sixth-seeded Chargers meet at 7:30 p.m. Monday in a Class 3A Mahomet Seymour Regional semifinal game. Number two, Rantoul at Mahomet Seymour Girls Basketball. The seventh-seeded Eagles will look to pull the upset of the second-seeded Bulldogs when this Class 3A regional semifinal game tips at 6 p.m. on Monday. Number three, Danville at Bloomington Girls Basketball. The fourth-seeded Vikings hit the road to play the fifth-seeded Purple Raiders at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday in a Class 3A regional semifinal game. And from Ask an Athlete, three questions with Rantoul Jr. Erica Baltimore, who competes in volleyball, basketball, and track and field for the Eagles. Three athletes I'd love to have dinner with are Ja Morant, Paige Bueckers, and Kobe Bryant. Two, the TV show I most like to binge watch is Sistas. Three, my biggest pet peeve is loud chewing. And from Illinois Basketball, titled Working Their Way Back into the Lineup, Boswell, Rogers, Both Progressing. This is by Scott Ritchie, Champaign. Ty Rogers' pregame workouts at State Farm Center are mostly a solo affair since the 6'6" wing got back enough strength in his left leg to move into that level of his recovery from off-season knee surgery. With a manager or two rebounding and feeding him passes, Rogers has slowly and mostly steadily ramped up his workout activity, slowed only by a groin injury last month. Tuesday night's pregame workout before the number 8 Illinois men's basketball team played Wisconsin saw Rogers, an Illini guard and forward, take that progression to another level. Rogers and Kylan Boswell opted for a joint session, which included some enthusiastic half-court 2-on-2 with backup guards A.J. Redd and Blake Fagbemi also involved. It was another positive step in Rogers' recovery, even if his status hasn't changed. The Saginaw, Boswell, is in a different place. The intensity of Tuesday's workout, coupled with a small increase in practice workload before Illinois lost 92-90 in overtime against Wisconsin, points to his potential return after breaking a bone in his right hand during a January 19th practice at Euban Basketball Complex. Boswell appeared to have no limitations as he and Rogers worked out Tuesday night at State Farm Center. The 6'2 guard dribbled and shot with his right hand, and the workout had just enough physicality and intensity for him to work up a good sweat, almost 2.5 hours before tip-off. Boswell was slated for a follow-up doctor's appointment this week, the results of which will better define his timetable for a return, which could come Sunday against Indiana, with ESPN's Pete Thamel reporting on Friday. The veteran guard's availability would be a game-time decision. Illinois coach Brad Underwood is expected to speak with local media on Saturday morning, where Boswell will undoubtedly be a topic of conversation. Strength and conditioning coach Adam Fletcher said he had his best day on the force plates that he's ever had in his career, so he's in a really good shape, Underwood said about Boswell. He's running every day. Now it's just a matter of taking the bumps and bruises that go along with contact on the basketball court. We hope to get some of that stuff done here soon if he's cleared. Rogers hasn't reached that stage yet. While he's back in practice, he's operating exclusively on the scout team. They're looking for a certain level of percentage of strength compared to his non-surgically repaired leg, Underwood said. Until he gets to that, we'll never put him in that situation to put him out there. He's doing a great job on our scout team and doing some things, especially in the half court, that are pretty effective. Boswell and Rogers are two of Illinois' most experienced players, two of the Illini's leaders as well, which means they've managed to remain positive influences despite being sidelined on game day. Boswell has missed the last 7 games, while Rogers hasn't played since Illinois lost to Connecticut in the Elite Eight of the 2024 NCAA tournament, after he redshirted last season. Rogers understands the culture and understands what's important, Illinois forward Ben Humiches said. He's a winner, so when it comes to his role right now as a winner is to help our team prepare for our next opponent. When he comes in to practice, he has the same mentality that he wants to be the best for our team for that day. It's not where he's able to go out on the court with us, but this is where he's been able to challenge us and make things difficult when we get to play opponents. We're prepared and ready to go because Ty has been a great example. Rogers' slow but steady progress following his knee injury has reached the point where he's starting to get some of his bounce back. He had a tip dunk in practice a week ago that left an impression, as he's starting to play above the rim again on a more consistent basis. The other day in pregame warm-ups, I'm watching him trying to get some conditioning in, and he's doing dunks again, Humiches said. I love to celebrate my teammates. When you see his journey and his progress, that's something I want to celebrate time and time again. Boswell is in a similar place as Rogers when it comes to on-court leadership, translating to the sideline the last few weeks. That he's maintained his voice, though, hasn't surprised his teammates. This has been Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, February 15th, 2026. We'll have to stop for now, and hopefully I look forward to reading with you again soon.